Joshi 2010s. We are this episode and the next one away from finishing 2012, 3 years into this journey out of the Dark Ages. And I guess technically heading into the next one, unfortunately. But here we are, JWP Climax 2012. And the end of the year for the company, and kind of the big moment that we had all been waiting for and hoping through the scene, is creating a new star. And that's what this whole night and build was too, was the Emi Sakura heel Gato move-like group. with Hanako Nakamori in it, and Kairi Onoyama coming off the heels of her not retirement, and that whole debacle. And so, in a weird way, Emi Sakura has yet again helped try to create a new star in the scene year after year. But the discussion point always with Emi Sakura is, how much does she actually attribute business-wise to these things? I mean, it's great that she puts people over, gets people in stories, but as I've kind of more or less alluded to or said about her, is she's not truly a capital S star by any means in the Joshi scene, despite her importance to it all. She's the one that's willing to do jobs, and because she's kind of the only one that's willing to do this, she has lost, or she did lose, that sense of credibility to her. Like, she's still very loved by the crowd, but she doesn't draw the crowd, if you catch my meaning there. But regardless, that's where we're at, and it really gets me wondering a few things, booking-wise, what led up to Emi Sakura being the one to take on this role and not, say, Kayako Hariyama, Tsubasa Kurigaki. Hell, I'll even throw Meiko Satomura under the bus with this one, because that's what seemingly always happens. But here we are, it's the end of the year from 2012, Korakuen Hall, 871 people at, I can't say it's their biggest show of the year, but this is definitely in line with their last few years, where in 2011, they got 1170 because of the Yonoyama retirement. But so we'll have to look at 2010, where they got 872. So very comparable. Where it worries me a bit for JWP is, did they make this move because they wanted to create the new star, or did they feel like it was time to do it because their attendance was so down in 2012 compared to the last couple of years? And it only went down the further we got into the year. So we began the year with Tsubasa Kurigaki and that story of beating Haley Hatred for the title, and then immediately losing it to Kayuki Hariyama at, what was that? Was that at Pure Slam or Climax? That was at, I'm just getting the show, that was Mania X in April. And then Hariyama, for all intents and purposes, had this title all damn year, right? Lost it at the very end. Emi Sakura had a couple matches there in the middle, after Emi beat her at, oh, whatever that show was that we covered. Yeah, let's, I won't look that up. But the point is that the more Hariyama had that title, the more things went down. And I think it went into how stale the scene at the top of this promotion is. And honestly, the cards got weaker, too. They were really relying on one-match shows, and that's not enough. Because if I go back to this Pure Slam show, just in general, with so this was Pure Slam in August that we covered. It had the very good and exciting Kagetsu main event against Hariyama, but an unproven person by any means. But it's really the meat of the rest of the card, which was so interesting. It was filled with Oz Academy people coming in, like Manami Toyota and Kurigaki. Haley Hatred was still there. You had the Miami Ozaki Ran Yuyu on the Ran Yuyu retirement tour against Nakamura and Ohada, so that was a little bit more on the exciting end. We had the JWP duo Bolshoi and Nakajima winning the tag titles at that show, going against the little Emi Sakura group, Heart Move Kai Reform, K Reform or Kai Reform? Don't remember. What the HMK? That's what I've called them. So the meat of the card was certainly more interesting, with stakes seemingly in the matches. They felt like they had more importance, and with the Kurigaki Hariyama match, that was tag partners going against each other. Hariyama going for the title again. There was certainly interest in there, and that's why it drew over 1,000, their biggest show of the year. We cut to this show, and yeah, it's comparable to 2010, but as we're getting out of the Dark Age, we should be expecting more. Let's see, what did that Emi Sakura? Is this the one? I was kind of looking for it as I was talking here. No, that was the Hariyama-Yonayama match. That only got 430. I mean, this goes into... Oh, that's right. It was, like, right after that. Because it was all... Yeah. So it was Emi Sakura and Hariyama. They got 310 at Shinjuku Face. Like, ouch. And that was with a damn good semi-main event tag title match, too. And they're only getting 300 people. JWP's in a bad place. And there needs to be they need to drum up interest with something. And 2012, I can't call it a lost year, but it's certainly not a good year. And this is a kind of a teaser for the next episode, because I do have these numbers over the years tallied up, at least through 2012. But the total attendance, and for those that maybe coming in, chiming in, HAW Destiny podcast first timers, obviously encouraged to head on over to Patreon. You get access to the Google Sheets and a lot of the shows in the Google Drive that I keep up with. But in 2010, or I gotta explain, I only tally the shows that get an attendance over 300. Because to me, that's actually drawing a respectable crowd for an indie promotion, okay? And then moving up from there. So with JWP, in total attendances over 300 total shows together, 4,400, okay? In 2011, they're at 4,200. Okay, so you're like, all right, boy, if Yonayama didn't retire that year, they wouldn't have made the 4,000 mark, probably. And then we go to, so we're at 4,400, 4,200, okay? Follow me so far? 2012, at the end of the show, 3,500 people. A huge decrease in their year-over-year numbers. Meanwhile, Stardom pops up, and they got almost 17,000. That's the difference in booking and connections and running a business, right? And just to give you a little clarity, Oz Academy is something we followed and kind of marked as the number one or two promotion in the scene right now by default. Oz Academy, 5,600, 9,200, and then in 2012 here, 9,000. So they're pretty steady, kind of going off there, a very reduced schedule compared to a lot of these promotions, but that's where it is. In a little perspective, in 2010, Neo had an attendance of just under 8,000. How much of that was inflated attendances because of how they work? We'll just go with that number, but they were the number one at the time, and they went out of business. So what does that tell you? So Stardom pops up with a ton of rookies and a couple vets, and they're popping 17,000. You want more context? TJPW, a firm number two under Stardom in 2023, right? 16,000 in these attendance markers. That's where we're at, okay? This is a time period where we're out of the Dark Ages, or coming out of it, and Stardom's immediately pulling number one numbers, okay? In their very first year with Yuzuki Aikawa at the helm, okay? She's the big star. And it really shows. So JWP, they need a spark, and that's what this show was meant to do. And it was to put over Arisa goddamn Nakajima. And she's got new gear for this show and everything. So I'm not going to start at the top like that. I will build up to it, and it's going to be a quick build because, my God, this undercard. Actually, no, I really like this show. I went full three out of the show. I was on the border of two because of one particular match, because it was so horrendous. But I went full three regardless, because the main event was so good. Okay. We start out with JWP Jr. and pop title match. Minami Katsu defeating Rabbit Miyu, 7 minutes. Title change there. Look, we know how I feel about Rabbit Miyu. She's a gimmick. She's very small. Crowd loves her. She's very good in these openers. She's fine. I won't beat anything up about it, okay? Minami Katsu got the win. Let's see what she can do. She got new gear. She's getting in shape. Let's go. Second match, Leon, and I swear to God, did not recognize her, but I sort of recognize her. It is Kaylee Ray. KLR herself in this match. She doesn't have her trademark, like, red-orange hair going on, but she's, you recognize that lankiness anywhere kind of deal. And I'm like, is that Kaylee Ray? I'm not sure. And it certainly was her, and she looked good. She looked like she was still not green as grass, but still rough around the edges. But she showed off some good athleticism, and her being paired, teaming with Leon, and then going against Sendai Sachiko, I thought it really worked for the 10 minutes that they did. And Leon and KLR got the win over the Sachigo sisters, the Jumonji sisters. Dash, she don't got it, guys. Not right now. Sachiko is... She was the star of the match. But Kaylee Ray definitely did... She looked like she belonged. And if JWP wants to continue having someone like a Kaylee Ray in their promotion, I'm very much welcoming it, because I liked this little undercard match here. Then we had the, quote, wanted, end quote, Santa Battle Royal. Guys, I hated this match. It was 11 minutes of just pain and not funny comedy. Here were your people in the match. Hamako Hoshi, thank God she was eliminated first. Kyoshi Ninja Ranmaru, Sachi Abe, Tsukasa Fujimoto, Makoto Rei, Kazuki, Lady Steel, Sari, the teenager, and Moiko Harui. They were doing shit like, and Kyoshi Ninja Ranmaru, it's Akino. Very painful to watch Akino in this role, in this goofy comedy troupe battle royal. To me, it's a waste of... Oh, Raiden Hagane was in there, if I didn't say her name. Was she even eliminated? I don't remember her being... Anyways. Nana Kawasa ended up winning this match. But you have Tsukasa Fujimoto, Rei, Sachi Abe, and company. You couldn't book him in like a trios match or number one contender tag title match, something. But here we are. Really bad. There was like a freeze frame and everyone's posing. And boy, Makoto, she wanted to know what the assignment was, because she was in the sexy Santa gear while everyone else had like wrestling gear and just the Santa like top on. Very strange. But Makoto was like, I'm going sexy, bitch. Everyone else, Hamako Hoshi dressed in like this brown trash bag outfit. I don't know what was going on. Horrid match. Do not recommend. -5 stars. I said the thing. And then the rest of the card was, I thought, good to great and eventually excellent. So we had the 7-star sisters, as they called, Masaki Iwata and Hiroyo Matsumoto, defeating HMK, that's Hanako Nakamori, and Mori. This tag team works. I'm, like, flabbergasted. It's yet another match where Mori, whom I thought was, like, a waste of space, her and Nakamori just work together. And they didn't reach, like, even 2 or 1 star. I was, like, 2.5, 2.75, but... It works. It's good. And Hiroyo Matsumoto and Masaki Iwata. Like, Hanako Nakamori is getting there. She's still a step below those two I just named, but she's very close. In terms of Misaki and Haruyo, these are the two the scene needs to push. And I'm talking, like, not 5 years from now. Not 3 years from... I'm like, now. Like, what are we doing? We're putting Kagetsu in a main event because probably her connection with Mako Satomura. But Haruyo gets over on a Stardom show against Nanai in a great match. And Misaki Iwata is one of the wrestlers of the year. Every year we're doing this. Let me check, because I got my match guide here in the rankings. Misaki Iwata is... She's been ranked every year, which eventually everyone kind of sort of is. Except Kaoko Hariyama. She was like... She only got 1 point in 2010. But Misaki Iwata... she got... Let's see... In 2012, she's going to finish about, she's going to finish top 10, barring what happens at the Ice Ribbon show, but I don't think anything, no one's even close, no. So she's finishing top 10. In 2011, last year, she finished top 5, and then in 2010... she finished top 10 again. So she's always up there, and yet she's not booked as a main eventer at all compared to everything else. And Haruyo, as I mentioned, she's always missing from the scene in this freelance status. She clearly has a lot of respect from her peers and puts on good matches, but she's never, like, doing anything. She had that one match with Nanai that I mentioned. And then what? She's in, like, tags like this and vacuums. And it stinks, because I want to see good wrestlers in good matches that matter, that can get them over and make a promotion more exciting. So, 12 minutes, good match, we move on. This one, I swear to God, it was 8 minutes, 34 seconds. When I saw the timestamp, I'm like, no way. And it was. It felt like they had a 16-minute match and drummed it down into this high-speed, just exciting WCW cruiserweight match on Saturday night. Bolshoi defeats Kaori Yonayama, and it's two fit, fast women doing what they do best. Did I go 2 out of 3? I think I went 2 out of 3. Let's see here. Gotta scroll down to December here in 2012. I went, yes, 2 out of 3. So 3.5, 3.75, around there. So good, do recommend it. And then the match that followed was Mako and Haley Hatred defeating the hometown team of Kurigaki and Hariyama. And I was excited for this one because it's three Hosses and Mako Satomura all just having meat magic in the ring, right? It was a lot of lariats, and it was a lot of scoop slams, and other slams, and power slams, and then Mako's in there occasionally throwing a kick. And I'm like, Mako, she held the match together, she did the Mako Satomura thing, very good wrestler, but man, I was like, who else could they have put in this match to make me go, damn it, who's going to replace Mako? And two people came to mind, Ryu Mizunami, and believe it or not, Nanai Takahashi. I would have loved her in this match. Don't take that out of context. It's a what-if scenario, okay? Leave me alone. With three veterans like this, they were really able to just give Haley Hatred the assignment. Go out there, throw lariats, make sweat go fly everywhere, and hopefully you pull off your power bombs this time against Kurigaki. And not botch anything. And that's what happened. Went 2 out of 3 here. 3.75. Phenomenal. Look, Mako Satomura, she shows up, when the lunar cycle of Jupiter aligns with Venus correctly. And she got it here. She made an appearance. And then we get to this main event. Baby. Emi Sakura, the champion. JWP openweight title match. From the evil, despicable... Heart Move Kai Reform against the Seki Goon, Arisa Nakajima trying to win the big title, and they both come out. Arisa Nakajima is drenched in like three titles. She's got the tag titles. She's got, what did she have at this time? Let me see here. December 2012, because I couldn't identify one of them. All right. I got to do cage match on my phone because my work computer that I'm on now blocks cage match. Okay. No, I need to look up. I instinctively went to JWP. I need to look up Arisa Nakajima for her title history. So, here she is in her early 20s getting put over. She had the Daily Sports tag titles, the JWP tag titles. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, because both titles are still kicking. Okay. I thought she had the Reina title on top of it. Hold on. No, not yet. Okay, that's later. Yeah, that's next year. So she has those two, and I thought, no, she had a third. I swear she had a third. Okay, well, Emi Sakura's got, like, a Philippine title, a Thailand title, and then this JWP Openweight title. So this is the big moment. This is what we live for. It's why we're doing this journey. Seeing the coronation of Arisa Nakajima. And what a match, what a moment. 21 minutes, 5 seconds. And let me tell you, this is the best match of 2012. Despite what JWP themselves said with what their match of the year was that year, which I believe was the tag match, which was the Sakura Yoneyama Nakajima Bolshoi match from Pure Slam. Excellent match. Top 10 match of the year. I'm not denying that. But I thought this stretch of title matches JWP put on to close out the year from like September onward were all fantastic. And they all delivered at high levels. And it's too bad that Hariyama herself was very much stale at this point in time, coming off, you know, multiple long reigns prior. People were over her. And then with the Emi Sakura and Yoneyama stories going on, and Emi Sakura, while being respected, not a big draw. Yoneyama doesn't have the trust of anybody anymore. So it led into this, and then Emi Sakura winning this title to get to this point. I think, I'm going to say it. I think if Hariyama would have held this title to Climax 2012 here and lost to Arisa Nakajima, they would have gotten a bigger crowd, a bigger coronation, and it would have counted more. Now, could they theoretically still make a lot of money with an eventual Hariyama Nakajima match? I think it'd be stupid to not have that as the goal. So we're going to go. We're going to cheat here a little bit. We're going to go to this openweight title. And we're going to check out what happens with this openweight title. Do they do the Hariyama match? They should do it down the line, if not second or third. Let's say she has those titles for a while. Okay. It is going to be the first defense in February of 2013 against Kayoko Hariyama at a show called Violence Road. So Arisa Nakajima has new gear, and I think this is the beginning of Violence Queen, because she shows a ton of fire and energy in this match. They do the show in Osaka, and it draws 357, so that's not good. And this card looks dire underneath. 5-match card, Osaka, something called the Yodogawa Ward Community Center. Ugh. I mean, they couldn't save that match for their Mania X show in April? That seems strange. They wouldn't do that. All right, we'll have a lot to talk about in 2013, it seems, with JWP. So that's what we're dealing with. So the idea was to get a good crowd, I guess, in the first show, and I'll have to look into other Osaka crowds that they did, and what that meant. So maybe it's just a circumstance of timing. But I think my theory of they didn't want Hariyama to put her over, since they're going to do that as a very first defense. I think they should have waited. I think that could have been a bigger showcase. But regardless, now for the match. Emi Sakura is a heel. She's against the hometown group, and Arsu Nakajima is defending her territory. And the crowd begins by chanting for Emi Sakura. Emi kind of like puts her hand up, says yeah, okay, and then she doesn't really do anything for the rest of the match around that. She leans into a lot of chops and having Arisa come back at her with heavy forearms. Really enjoyed that. The whole structure of the match was Emi Sakura beating the shit out of this woman and Arisa fighting back from underneath and showing that she can hang and dish out as good or better punishment. And the structure and build to Arisa getting nastier, meaner, and hitting harder all the way to the end with a final crescendo was, I thought, chef's kiss to it all. That's why I say it's the best match of 2012. It's the best women's match of 2012. It's one of my favorite matches I've seen on this journey at this point. I put very few above this. I still think that Kaoru Mayumi Ozaki match is still comfortably at the top, along with the Emi Sakura Yonayama hair match. There's the Tamura Kurihara. Okay, a lot of good matches in 2010, but it clears everything I saw in 2011. 2011, I thought, was a weak in-ring year, personally. But there's a moment in this match where Arisa Nakajima is on the apron. She gets, let's see, how did the sequence go? It went Emi Sakura, I think she forearms her or suplexes her or something. Nakajima goes for her neck and head. Then she gets on the apron, and Emi Sakura kind of knocks her down, setting her up for Tope Suicidas. And Sakura gets the crowd going. She goes for the run, and Nakajima's not up. So then she's got to do it again. Nakajima's up, and she does it three times. On the third Tope, now Arisa's got like help kind of looking at her. So I don't know if she had a concussion at this point or something, or it was planned in the match, but we're going to go with this wasn't planned. Because Emi Sakura awkwardly gets on the mic and starts cutting a promo diminishing JWP in the promotion. This is the best you got, this kind of stuff. And it gave Arisa time to recover, and then the crowd kind of fight with her, and Arisa fires up, runs at Emi, gives her a couple good shots, gets her back in the ring, and then from there, it's just suplexes. It's forearms. It's heavy slaps. And then finally, we get to the finish. And Arisa, we had some good near falls, and Arisa counters out of an Emi Sakura German and meets her with the sickest headbutt you can imagine. Just the thud. And Arisa is busted open hard way off her own headbutt, and now she's bleeding from the face, gets Emi in a, I think it was a dragon suplex, and pins her 1-2-3 with blood dripping down her face. And you want something that gets my blood pumping? It was that. It was a disgusting headbutt finish, but worked through the story and everything they were telling. And Arisa cuts this ending show promo with her face bloody, head just getting swollen because it was so bad. Emi puts her over clean as a sheet. And now they're entering 2013, the only promotion with a new star champion. What a way to go. Wave, who knows what they're doing. They got tag titles. Even though Kurihara won the Catch the Wave, if we can call that a title, for the sake of it. But, you know, JWP, they're the ones that saw attendance declining, and they recognized that they needed to really latch on to a new star, and they truly believe in Arisa Nakajima. I mean, it was very clear from the get-go of 2012 that the end goal should be Arisa Nakajima, and they got to that throughout the year with building her up in tags, getting her credibility in singles matches. They didn't really have her beat anyone, technically, outside of a tag. But when you have a small promotion like this, I understand wanting to save singles matches, especially what you think are bigger ones to draw money for later down the line. So at this point in time, I mean, I've said that Oz Academy really has the only true title at this point in time. Ice Ribbon has Mio Shirai, who's a total joke champion with how she's booked and presented, especially in outside promotions. But at this point in time in 2012, Chikao Nagashima's held this title all year. And the matches we have to remember her by are a Hiroyo Matsumoto match in August. And that's it. That's it. That's all she's done this year. So it certainly isn't in Oz Academy's fashion to disappoint. But anyways. Yeah, I went full three on this match. 4.25, I think, is fair. I can't really go higher because I guess it certainly was missing a couple elements to really take it over the top, but that's where I stand. I think this is the best match of 2012, and look forward to this next episode where, you know, I promise that this is going to be the thing is Ice Ribbon Ribbon Mania is going to be the last show we do, and then or for each year, followed by kind of the year in review. Attendances, match of the years, wrestlers of the year, that kind of thing. So go back and listen to the last couple. First one involved Partner in Crime. Second involved was Solo. Guys, you got to watch this show. It's in the Google Drive. If you haven't joined the Patreon, very easy to access it there. I'm not really sure how you can get this particular show anywhere else. I'm sure it's on some sketchy sites that you can find, but, you know, support me at least gathering up all these things and doing these podcasts and keep them going. I enjoy doing these. Guys, see you next time.